Welcome and good evening. I'm Rudolf Hucker, and I'm wearing a very fetching boater for Straw Hat Day.
I'm Wilma Fingerdoo. It's Galactic Notebook Day as well. So I've got a brand new notebook, and you're all going on the list.
I'm Norma Snockers, and it's Intergalactic Chocolate Chip Day, so I've been dipping chips into chocolate.
I'm Mike Rochburns, and I'm celebrating National Caesar Day by wearing a toga and drinking Canada's national drink.
I'm Sandy Grevis, and I wish it was Interplanetary Eye Bleach Day, because that's not how you're supposed to wear a toga, Mike.
I'm Mia Harkness, and I forgot to give myself a line.
Well, right. OK, let's get to the headlines before he goes all Julius Caesar and invades, I don't know, B-Deck or something. Big Bad Bung in Federation comes under scrutiny.
You're not supposed to use limpets like that, say experts.
The latest fashion from Eddie Lee Wise and Sons, plus his daughters.
A wee little robbery causes show snack panic.
There are concerns that the CG might not be as new as publicised.
Galaxy does not go boom.
Compact and Bijou, this week's potted BGS bit.
News this week that Federal President Jerome Archer has taken delivery of a fully engineered, custom-fitted Sal Kruger Beluga liner, raising questions about propriety, policy, and whether the President's avowed preference for pragmatism now includes onboard spa treatments. The vessel, named Godu 1, was presented by a coalition of interstellar leisure and tourism stakeholders, a group not formally aligned with the Federation. Although officially recorded as a gift to the office of the President, precedent suggests that the ship is unlikely to remain with the office once Archer is no longer occupying it. Outgoing presidents are traditionally allowed to take personal items with them, including furniture, cutlery, and the executive jacuzzi. Valued at close to a billion credits, Godu 1 includes long-range capability, high-end defensive systems, and a selection of executive furnishings reportedly chosen from a catalogue described as unapologetically plush. While Archer has long styled himself as a practical, no-frills leader, committed to getting out among the people, this particular transport arrangement includes velvet acoustic panels and a multi-environment wine vault. Archer's team insists the ship will support strategic visibility and diplomatic reach. Critics suggest that it may instead support a refrigerated canopy trolley. The manufacturer, Sal Kruger, confirmed the vessel's construction and compliance with civilian regulations, while declining to comment on any political ramifications. The President's office has likewise stated that a recent and substantial reduction in tariffs on imported Sal Kruger vessels throughout federal space is absolutely nothing to do with this particular gift. Not everyone is convinced. Opposition figures within Congress have questioned the optics of accepting a high-value asset from a non-aligned manufacturer, particularly when that manufacturer may now enjoy improved market access. Ethics oversight bodies are said to be monitoring the situation, which historically indicates a comfortable chair and a long lunch. Meanwhile, Core Dynamics, longtime supplier of presidential transport and builder of the Federation's Farragut-class battle fleet, issued a brief statement.
"We wish the President all the best with his new ride,"
it read.
"And good luck with that when the next Thargoid invasion hits. The only thing that presidential bung is good for is stopping him shitting himself when he realises how poorly armed the Beluga actually is when the Empire attacks."
Military analysts have noticed that while Godu 1 is fitted with basic defences, it is unlikely to survive sustained contact with anything larger than a Type 7 pilot with a grudge. Nonetheless, the President appears unfazed and was last seen boarding the ship for a fact-finding tour of resort facilities in the Pleiades. Public response has been tepid. Some Federation citizens admire the President's commitment to visibility. Others have pointed out that visibility is easier to achieve when arriving in something that registers as a minor celestial body on local scanners.
Following a recent update to their navigational subroutines, Collector Limpets, now officially designated Mark 1.1, have been enjoying something of a renaissance in spacefaring circles. With improved CDR, collection death ratio, statistics, and enhanced reliability around asteroid debris, shipwreck clutter, and the angular rear fins of Type 10s, the drones have been hailed as vastly less explodey by users across the bubble. However, a growing number of reports reaching Shinrata Desra suggest that Mark II's newfound competence may have its limits, namely planetary surfaces. Pilots engaged in surface material gathering from so-called brain trees, crystal shards, and other semi-botanical geological anomalies are finding that the newly upgraded limpets are encountering a rather firm boundary between collection and detonation. The Pilots Federation is now believed to be investigating a spat of what are being formally classified as drone-to-surface interactions of the destructive kind. Commanders operating near high-G environments, who have grown accustomed to filling their bins via remote limpetry, are now experiencing a return to more traditional methods, namely driving around in a Scarab-class surface reconnaissance vehicle and bumping into things manually. While the Mark II limpets continue to perform admirably in space, their enthusiasm for surface contact appears undiminished by caution, resulting in behaviour described by one affected pilot as aerial yeet, followed by spontaneous component redistribution. The Pilots Federation has not yet issued a formal statement. It remains unclear whether this change is deliberate. Some suggest the drones were never intended for planetary use, citing their distinct lack of a landing gear. Others point to possible commercial pressures, following complaints from certain engineers that they were too busy now that materials could be gathered without customary rituals of SRV deployment, surface skidding, and that one bit where you drive off a cliff while checking your material inventory. Economic impacts have also been noted. Administrators at Dav's Hope and Dom's Corner, once thriving hubs of surface material acquisition, have reported sharp declines in visitor numbers, attributing the slump to material tourism erosion, brought about by the rise of planetary limpet usage. One internal memo blames a popular Galtube demonstration, in which a commander managed to clear an entire geological site in 7 minutes, accompanied by an upbeat synth track and several iconic hashtags. In the meantime, planetary gatherers are advised to revert to old methods. SRV drivers, previously relegated to backup duty, are reportedly enjoying a minor resurgence in relevance.
Eddie Lee Wise, proprietor of Eddie Lee Wise and Sons, plus his daughters, master tailor of Lave Station and purveyor of galactic formal wear with Bounce, has issued a public critique of current fleet carrier crew uniforms, describing them as
a disgrace to cloth, taste, and anyone with eyes.
Speaking from the shop floor of his orbital atelier, flanked by bolts of improbably luminous fabric and a rotating mannequin that appeared to be weeping, Eddie pulled no punches.
It's all greys, dark greys, middling greys, and that odd blue they use when they've run out of proper dye. I've seen better colour palettes on a rusty sidewinder.
He went on to accuse current uniform design of
violating both taste and tailoring.
Adding,
it's not that they're uniforms, it's that they're uniformly drab. You could walk past full bridge crew and not notice a thing. Except perhaps the smell of synthetic fibre and depression.
Long-time resident of Lave Station and self-described soft goods visionary, Eddie's tailoring enterprise is a staple of local commerce. His clientele includes minor celebrities, three disgraced admirals, and one unidentified member of the Pilots Federation Council with strong views on lapels. He claims to be the only tailor within 40 light years to offer fully pressurated brocade and adjustable waistlines that don't scream retired ensign.
Barb says they're dull. Ken, though, says they make people's backsides look like they've surrendered. And I agree with both of them.
He added, gesturing to a rail of prototype replacements, which included a sequined captain's jacket and a jumpsuit with tassels for ceremonial purposes only. When asked about pricing, Eddie was refreshingly direct.
Well, we're not talking billions, just a few thousand arcs. You can't buy dignity, but you can hire it in three colours and two lengths.
He has proposed a full suite of updated uniform options, ranging from command-cut tunics in real fake velvet to morale-boosting technician overalls with inbuilt posture correction. Early designs include accents in gold trim, iridescent shoulder detailing, and some described only as the flirt collar. Fleet carrier operators interested in looking less like galley staff at a minor penal installation are encouraged to visit Eddie's establishment on Lave Station. Fittings are by appointment only.
We'll get your measurements right,
he added.
Cough, please.
Authorities have confirmed the successful apprehension of a petty pirate this week, following the highly targeted theft of Commander Flossie's emergency snack cache from her unattended vessel. The crime occurred while her ship was parked on routine business at a planetary outpost. The hatch had been left open, reportedly, just for a moment, and by the time she returned, the entire stash was gone. Among the items taken were two Tunnock's tea cakes, a bag of deep-fried Watsits, still warm, and three cans of Iron Brew, known locally as juice.
The loss was more emotional than logistical,
says Flossie.
I've been serving that tea cake since Tuesday.
Local security logs showed no forced entry, suggesting the perpetrator had either a light touch or a background in youth theatre. Initial investigations led nowhere until analysis of sticky fingerprints on a discarded foil wrapper pointed to an individual already on several station watch lists for snack-related mischief. Tracking efforts led security teams across several systems before the culprit was finally traced to a remote settlement on Earth, in a region formerly known as North Britain, a small, rugged and largely weather-resistant territory north of the ancient containment wall once installed to prevent just such incursions.
He was caught by the Trossachs,
confirmed Constable Rory McLagan of the Stirling Orbit Enforcement Wing.
He tried to make a run for it down the glen with a tea cake in one hand and a bruised can in the other. Dented the Iron Brew. That'll no go down well.
The accused, whose name has not been released pending translation, is believed to have consumed one of the Watsits during the chase. No formal charges have yet been brought, though he has been issued with a temporary ban from vending machines on all orbital facilities north of Edinburgh. Flossie is understood to have received replacement snacks, though sources say she now keeps them in a locked and shielded container marked personal, not for pilfering. No further incidents have been reported, and the matter is considered resolved. A complaint has been sent to the apology officer regarding racial stereotyping in reporting of this article in the media, but as no one was described as being a ginger or wearing tartan, the complaint was rejected. As Rory put it,
I'm just glad there's no been a murder.
Reports have emerged this week that the community goal rewards handed out at Rhea's Resilience were delivered in a less than pristine state. Commanders collecting their pre-engineered abrasion blasters discovered minor but definite damage to their freshly awarded modules. One pilot, Commander Scoob, first raised the alarm. After docking, fully repairing, and claiming his hard-earned blasters, he noticed his ship's diagnostics still showing unresolved damage. A brief inspection in advanced maintenance revealed the source. The newly installed modules had arrived already scuffed. Damage was minimal, just 1% wear, easily fixed, but the curious part lay in the repair interface. Fix both modules from the ship menu cost 20 credits. The same job from the advanced maintenance panel came to just 2. The discrepancy has not been explained. Speculation among hangar crews point to either careless handling during delivery, improper installation by unqualified dock personnel, or perhaps a mystery saboteur who likes or dislikes for surface mining equipment.
Sandy. Would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for those meddling diagnostic icons.
Noted one technician. The Pilots Federation has not commented. The station staff at Rear's Resilience maintain all modules were delivered in accordance to standard contractual scuff tolerances. Commanders collecting remaining CG rewards are advised to check their modules before launch, especially if their engineer appears to be walking or wearing a mask and walking away and says "Ruh-ro," when asked about the torque settings.
Astronomers across human space have confirmed that not a single supernova event has been observed within the Milky Way since systematic record keeping began in the 21st century. The current absence now stretches over 1,280 years, covering multiple scientific eras, 3 calendar reforms, and the rise and fall of at least one Mars-based think tank. Based on historical models and stellar population data, astrophysicists would expect to observe 2 to 3 supernovae per century in a galaxy of this size. Since the year 2025, the expected number has now reached over 30. The actual number remains 0. Professor Yvette Spungiform of the Colonia Institute for Stellar Studies described the situation as
a bit odd. You can account for variance. You can adjust for obscured regions, bad luck, and interference from background radiation. But when the margin of error is 30 exploding stars and the result is still nil, it's hard to claim the model's working.
Dr. Sim Yarkel at the Daniels Progress Sky Survey stated that all known supernova detection networks have been reviewed and found to be operational. Recent gravitational wave monitoring from neutron star collisions in satellite galaxies confirms external event detection remains functional.
We're seeing stellar deaths outside the galaxy. Ours just seems to be unusually restrained. It's not that they've stopped dying. It's that they're dying somewhere we can't see, or not dying at all.
Some astrophysicists have begun to speculate on more complex causes. A leading theory, currently under cautious review, suggests that prolonged and repeated fuel scooping by hyperspace-capable vessels may be altering the thermal balance of main-sequence stars. Dr. Enid Crank of the Forge Council Observatory has been examining fuel consumption logs.
If you remove surface hydrogen continuously over millennia, it's plausible that core evolution could slow down. We're not saying limpets are killing stars, but we're also not saying they aren't.
Others have pointed to the unusually stable composition of interstellar media in key sectors. A recent paper submitted to the Kepler Vault suggested that an increase in stellar recycling via Thargoid conflict may have contributed to extended main sequence stability. The author later withdrew the claim after being shown a diagram. Cultural and economic effects have also been observed. Supernovae have long provided valuable remnant materials and navigational beacons. In their absence, salvage corporations have had to rely more heavily on shipwreck sites and belt cluster reclamation. several observatories have closed, citing lack of activity. When asked whether the current drought could simply be a statistical anomaly, Professor Spongiform offered a long pause.
Yes, in the same way that not seeing a rain cloud for 1200 years might technically fall within the outer bounds of climate variation.
One individual, Klangor Bilgebay, continues to insist that the galaxy's uncooperative behaviour is not natural at all. A freelance theorist with a limited astronomy background and a surplus of time, Bilgebay maintains that the entire situation is evidence of a...
background rendering failure in galactic simulation engine. Stars aren't exploding because they were never meant to,
he said.
It's just a background texture. Somebody forgot to switch the variable from static to dynamic. Look at the nebulae. It's all very neat. Too neat.
Scientific bodies have not responded to the claim, although one committee member reportedly referred to Bilgebay's submission as lunacy. Meanwhile, survey groups continue to monitor high-mass stars. Observation networks are being upgraded. Patrols are being dispatched to regions with known supernova candidates, in case the galaxy is simply waiting for everyone to stop watching. No conclusions have been drawn, no stars have exploded, and the galaxy, once again, has declined to comment.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we lose our Galweb connection and I have to ask someone else to read the nonsense we write. But then the show gets cancelled, so we just use the same one and update the numbers. Except there are no numbers, for which I can only apologise. With a presence in 400-odd systems and counting, it's never easy keeping track of things in Hutton and Hutton-adjacent space. So, let's start with the boom systems. Wolf 1481, Barnard Star, 36 Ophiuchi, Wolf 359, Wolf 294, and Leuton 143-23 are all experiencing booms this week. There is also an infrastructure failure in Narensis. And, well, that's it really. So, if that's all a bit boring for you, then why not get yourself out into the colonies, where things are a lot more exciting and fluid. They have droughts, famines, outbreak, civil unrest, wars and civil wars. Those are the ones where you have to shake hands with your enemy and ask them, how do you do, before shooting them. I even heard someone get bitten in the bum once. But what does it all mean? Well, I'll tell you. If you want to truck it or mission run, then do both, or either, in one of those boom systems. Maybe you could truck in food and machinery to Narensis. If you want to shoot it when you're out, well, you're out of luck this week. Wait. Hot off the night shift presses, 10th Hawk Squadron have requested war support. So pop over to the Discord channel for details. And if you want to risk life and limb in the pursuit of adventure, then get yourself over to those off-world colonies. And that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit.